Accession number 9422, reel 6.
Mr. Hayward, reel 6. You were telling me about the bacon issue and how you used to collect the fat. What did you do with it?
Well, when we got our firing of the means to light a small fire at night, I got my Dixie out, which was then full of frozen fat, and put that over the fire, and everybody who came along, who's got that? I mean, they hadn't smelt bacon, you know, in the course of cooking, you know, since they've left England. And so how do you get hold of that? I said, oh well, I got that from the platoon's rations. And the sergeant said, oh no, I know, hey, why you're always the last. I leave you there, and then go off myself, and you were getting probably about half a small Dixie of bacon fat, which you used midnight later on to fry your bread up in.
Now now this bacon that wouldn't come with the dry rations, would it, or would it?
No, I think it came up with the tea for breakfast.
To continue with the dry rations then that reached you at 12
yes.
o'clock at night, what other tinned food did you get?
McConaughey's mixed meat. They were the firm that made it, and everybody knew what McConaughey's meant. Of course you had to have a means of opening tins, which we all had our own heavy pocket knives.
So you just cut them open?
Yeah, just cut them open, yes. And warm them up over the fuel, because we had some charcoal fuel and some sticks.
What was McConaughey's like? Did you like it? Was it good quality? Or?
Well, we were hungry, and so we were prepared to eat anything. It wasn't bad at all. And as I say, there was none left on the side of the plate.
What other tinned food did you get? Did you get bully beef?
Yes, we had bully beef, of course. Yes, we did indeed. And then we.
What was that like?
Well, it was meat, and it was sustaining, and quite good, quite good. No one could complain about the actual meat, and we enjoyed it. And
what sort of meat would you compare it to now today?
It was cold meat, which we have got, which in a sealed tin, which we had to open and get out, and it was in a, it was about 3 inches by 2 inches by 2 inches lump inside this tin, which we either took wholly out and put in our haversack loose, or ate so much and left the remainder in the tin.
Was it rather like corned beef is today?
Yes, indeed. That's the nearest thing it could be compared with.
Do you remember any other tinned food you got?
Well,
were you getting pork and beans at that time?
Yes, yes, we had pork and beans too, and that's where we heated those up, you know, over this charcoal fire. That they were very good, and then of. When we were out of the line, we bought from either the Expeditionary Force canteen or from the French shops other edibles, which we kept for eating up the line. I remember a friend of mine, we had in a tin what some cocoa au lait. I've never met it anywhere before or since than in the line. and it was most delicious stuff. Oh, it was delicious. I remember it cost a bit, about 50 francs, and I used to go shares with a friend of mine in the same section. He and I had been to school together, and he was on duty one spell and I was on duty on another spell. When I came off, I said to him, I said, Tom, I said, where's this cocoa au lait? He said, that which we bought between us. I said, yes. He said, well, he said, I've had mine. I said, yes, but where's mine? He said, he always said, yours was on the top, and I had to eat yours to get at mine. And you've heard of café au lait, haven't you? Yes, well, have you ever heard of this cocoa au lait? No, well,
like
worlds apart. It was marvellous. I've never had anything in my life.
What did it taste of? Like hot chocolate?
Yes, it was, of course, came up cold, but one heated it up. But it was food for the gods.
Now, besides the tinned food, what else would come up with the dry rations? Would you get biscuits at this time, as well as the bread?
Yes, some biscuits, yes. We always carried our emergency rations, as you know, not to be eaten until we were given instructions to eat them. We carried them about with us.
What were these emergency rations?
Well, they were hard. The nearest thing I can tell you, they were hard dog biscuits. It had to be a good dog to bite them.
Did you ever have to eat these?
Once I did, yes. I got to, yes, later on, when we were in action and there was no orderly rationing thing, we had recourse to these biscuits.
How did you manage with them?
Well, I saw several fellow with broken teeth through trying to bite them. I used to try and break them with my knife and then just suck them down. But
they taste all right, besides being hard.
Well, hardly any taste at all. Hardly any taste. But there must have been some nutriment in them.
What else was in your emergency rations?
I can't think of anything else. Just that.
Now, you mentioned you got up some charcoal and some firewood.
Yes.
How did you set about making a fire in these wet conditions?
Yes. Yes. We had little trench burners, I think. They are little iron things where you might, like you would say for scouting or anything like that, and you get that started up.
So this was for you.
So you could heat up things.
Did everybody have these little burners? Or
Yes, I think they did. I can't remember now whether they were rationed or whether we'd been tipped off to take one out with us if you wanted something hot at midnight.
And you'd get charcoal.
Yes, the issue.
Would you make these fires only at night? I'm thinking of the smoke factor.
Yes, well, charcoal's hardly any smoke.
So you'd use them to heat food in the day as well?
Well, we rather kept them at night time when we didn't get any ration parties up, say, between six at night and perhaps eight the next morning. We had to provide for ourselves during that time, and that's what we did from the issue that had come up as dry rations.
So can you tell me then, you've told me about the rations you've brought up, can you tell me how you'd split these into meals during the day? What would you have for each meal? I know you wouldn't have a formal meal per se, but how would you divide your food up between meals?
Well, I think everybody to his own liking. When he wanted, some would say, oh, well, I can last out, say, from breakfast being brought up to us, the bacon and the tea. Some people would say, I can last out, say, to 2 o'clock. And Mark, maybe you may have been on trench fatigue, trying to clean the trench that you had to do. So you just use the opportunity as it presented itself and to your own personal liking.
So you just open a tin if you fancied it?
That's right, yes.
Did you ever get any hot food brought up while you were in the line at this Somme Marshes point?
No, none other than hot tea. Which didn't come up hot sometimes.
What was the tea like?
Oh, it was welcome. It was tea we've been used to, say, over in England when we've been out on manoeuvres. You know, the strong tea, well, that was all right, as long as it was warm and wet.
Did you get any fresh meat brought up for you to try and cook, besides the bacon?
No, I can't remember that. I can't remember, no.
Did you have enough food with all this? Pardon? Did you have enough food to eat?
Well, we kept going. Of course, we stuffed ourselves up, you know, when we got out of the line with what we could buy. But it was quite remarkable on what we were able to maintain our activity in such bad physical conditions and with such small amount of food.
Now, you say rations were issued, you know, at various times. How were they physically issued? Did you go to a place to fetch them, or were they brought round to you?
No, they'd be delivered to the sergeant of the platoon, and then if there were two men on a fire step, one went to draw his, and then when he came back, the other one went to draw his.
So you went to wherever the sergeant.
So the front line was guarded all the time.
Was this always the same point that rations were issued from? I'm thinking of the point of the Germans identifying where such a thing went on, movement.
Pretty well, yes. When I say for the same, a section wouldn't move from that part of the line to which it was responsible. I always, for instance, when I went on fire step duty, I trod on the same fire step each time. And there might have been another fellow at the other end of the fire step.
Now, what about water? Did you get a water ration brought up?
Well, we had our water bottles, and they were filled when we went up, and certainly would it be as much as a quart of water we would have ourselves carrying up as we went up into the line, plus the tea.
So you didn't get any separate issue of water while you were actually there?
No, I can't remember, no.
What about any other drinks besides tea? You weren't issued with any, did you?
Well, I've told you about the cocoa au lait.
Is it issued as well by the army?
No, we bought that. Yes, it was expensive. I think 50 francs a tin.
But the army?
Oh no, 5 francs a tin. Sorry,
the army didn't issue any cocoa.
No.
What about rum? Did you get rum?
Yes, on occasion. First thing. In the morning, somewhere about 6 o'clock. In other words, just at the time of changing over from 1 hour on to two off to 2 hours on and four off, the sergeant would come along with his mess can of rum, and we had a sergeant, not one of those who joined up his Bristol zone, but had been transferred to us later on from the first class, as he was a regular, and he came along with his mess can 3/4 full of rum. And he'd come to each fellow on different fire steps, and he'd take a dessert spoon, goes and you went like that and took all you could in. Then he said, "I don't think how you young chaps can eat this. I don't like it at all." And he thought he was deluding us by doing that and making himself a martyr and drunk, pretty well drunk by the time he got to the end of the platoon line.
So he'd take a drink of it while
with me,
saying.
yes. And he'd got the idea that how he was dishing these sort of smart young people that he'd been sent from a regular battalion to act as an instructor.
What about your cigarette ration? When would that be issued?
Well, no, I've got the idea that we bought cigarettes. Possibly that was in excess. Players were... I hadn't started to smoke. I only just left school. I hadn't started to smoke, but I smoked there, and they were a boon. People like to have a cigarette going. And living in Bristol, as I did then, the cigarettes which I would have bought then would have been Wills's Gold Flake, being Bristol... of Bristol manufacture, but players seem to be the popular line. Of course, I know that was in the Imperial Tobacco Company. All the British firms were in that, and I think that was 5 francs a tin. I think there were 15 a tin.
So you'd buy your own cigarettes,
yes,
behind the lines and bring them forward.
Yes, but we did get a ration. Have I shown you those that I've?
I did. Actually,
that was ration.
Ration tin.
Yes, that was ration.
So you get a tin of them while you're in the line, would you?
You'd get a ration of those cigarettes. The tin itself was my pipe tobacco tin.
Overall, did you find the diet and what you had to eat and drink, did you find it dull, a bit repetitive, or was it satisfactory?
No, we wanted so much food that the kind of food didn't bother us. It was food, and that was sufficient. We were under strained conditions, stress conditions. The weather was bad, winter time, and the actual places where we were rough and cold, and the cubby holes I've told you, so that anything which put a little bit of internal warmth inside one was very welcome.
I'd like to go on and look at some of the health factors. I mean, we've covered the rats that plague you and the lice. Could you describe exactly what the sanitary arrangements were, particularly the latrines?
Well, we were in trenches which the French had occupied or made, and the regular troops in the brigade hadn't bothered to do other than do what the French do, out over the top, you know, and into a big hole. But we made latrines where you sat on a little pole, our instructions were to relieve ourselves. Whether you're going pump ship or whether you're going to empty your bowels in this one place, and most of us have been used to having such a place like that at home, and so we would walk along to it and relieve ourselves in that way.
What could you describe the latrine in more detail?
It was cut into the side of the trench, and there was a deep hole. Or shall I say, 2 foot down. There was a pole across, and you either stood and pumped ship, or you sat on it and relieved your bowels. I forgot what happened about toilet paper. Any odd bit of paper you got about you, I think you used for that. Then there was someone appointed per company to look after these latrines.
What did they do?
First of all, dig them and put them right, and then fill them in when they were just past further usage.
What about waste disposal? Empty cans, general waste of life. What happened to
them? Well, I think probably empty cans would go over the top.
Towards the Germans?
Yes, that way, yes.
So there were no collection of facilities?
No, there was no collection, no. I remember the first time we went over wiring, of course everything was going out over the top tonight, and go quietly, not a word to one another, and we hadn't got, it was rough, outside barbed wire here, no barbed wire there, and we were going to make the thing a proper continuous line. I was just along, and I just happened to step to one side, and I went up there into a French latrine. I thought to myself, well, people, I said, help, help. They said, shh, shh. I thought, I'm not going to die like this, that when my parents asked me what caused his death, that he fell into a latrine and was drowned. And so they pushed their rifles down, and I caught hold of two of them, and they pulled me out. But no one would come near me for the rest of the time in the line.
What about washing either yourselves or your clothes while you're in the line? Did you even attempt it?
No, we couldn't spare the water. We hadn't got, we didn't have water up laid on for that, and we certainly didn't spare it out of our hot water bottles. I remember of the story about when the Prince of Wales was going up the line when the Australians in, and and he said, to one of the fellows in the front line, bad conditions. He said, well, you don't seem to be bad here. And he said, well, it would be better if you stepped out of my shaving water.
So, you weren't expected to wash or shave in the
front line? No, on the contrary. You see, from the point of view, you wouldn't be ready for immediate action, would you? If you were just stripped to the waist, or if you were just having washed your neck and face. Where's your equipment? Not at hand. No, you wore your equipment the whole time. But I believe when we were off duty in the afternoon, let's say between, say, 2 and 6, when it was 2 hours on the fire step and 4 hours off, then I think that you're allowed to take your heavy pack off. You didn't have to wear that about the trench when you're at rest. In that 4 hours that you were at rest, you could take your pack off. I think you had to keep your ammunition on. But I think that you couldn't go too far away from where your place of duty was without your rifle.
I presume all spit and polish ideas about keeping your uniform clean and tidy and your leather equipment went.
The only rule that came out then, and of course it was almost limited to the places like the Somme Marshes, was you had to rub frostbite on your feet every day. And it was an awful job getting these things right on and off, and then pulling up your pants and taking your socks off, and Rob issued frostbite, because so many casualties were caused by people getting frostbite. You had to rub your feet with this cream. I forget the name now.
The cream was to prevent frostbite, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. And it was a crime if you didn't do it once a day. People were... had feel punishment for being lazy and not doing it.
Why do you think it was compulsory?
Because otherwise you were a casualty.
In what way?
That your feet got frostbite and you couldn't walk.
I'd like, moving on to that, what effect the climate had, you know, the weather conditions had on you. Firstly, we'll look at the effects of the cold, since we've got frostbite. How did it affect your life? The cold.
Well, we were very fit when we went to France. We were very fit people, because we went into conditions quite different from what they were at the at Ashton Gate. We were in barracks, and the food we had there, so we were exposed, and we had far less rations than we did when we were in much more comfortable circumstances.
What sort of problems did the cold cause you, if any? Was it something you would just...
Well, I didn't know of anyone having flu, or don't catch a cold and you've had a runny nose. I can't remember having anything like that, which is the sort of thing that you have to are warned to prepare to guard against in civil life.
So you didn't get so-called cold-related diseases like.
No, I'm not saying my hands didn't get cold. Apart from woolen gloves, which we had pulled on, we had sort of canvas gloves, which were slung round the neck, and you just pushed your hands into them like that. You kept this string hanging down, and if you wanted to free your hands. Say if you want to go to the lavatory, you just pull your gloved hand out of these army gloves and let them stay like the next. So they were always there, and people did put their hands in them.
Did you have anything else to try and keep the cold off? Balaclavas or hats or anything like that?
Yes, we had balaclava helmets, and of course we were then wearing our normal service cap, you know, the peak cap. Steel helmets hadn't come into use by then.
So all in all, you didn't yourself have that much trouble with the cold. You just felt cold, but it didn't trouble you too much.
No, it didn't, providing that we did what we had to do. There is this about it. In wearing our overcoats, as we did to keep warm, of course, that trailed through the mud, and they were just thick pieces almost of frozen mud, the tail, and and they cut against your legs, you see, the last foot of them is at below the knee, and the only time I was put on a crime sheep was because I'd cut a foot off to stop it rubbing and cutting my leg.
Did things actually freeze up during this period?
Not where we were, on the Somme marshes, where there was so much water from the marshes that had come up that it didn't go away, so we were walking through soup all the time.
Did it snow at all?
Yes, there was some snow, but I have not any recollection of a particular snowstorm.
Well, I'd like now to look at the effect of all the water. What was it like living in soup mud? What sort of difficulties did it pose to you?
Well, it was the difficulty of literally walking through it. See, you were pushing against... you just imagine if being in mud in this in yourself in this country up to here, sometimes even up to there, there was a difficulty in walking. You weren't walking in just open air, you were walking through this resistance all the time.
Did it cause any health problems through always having your feet wet? I mean, not so much the frostbite on your feet, I mean things like trench feet. Did that sort of thing happen much?
Well, yes, we had trench feet as well. That was one of the things that was the cold and damp.
Did you have any problems with your feet being?
It was a nuisance, using up some of the time that we could well have been asleep in rubbing, in taking your jack boots off and your socks, and exposing your feet and rubbing this. Whatever it was, the ointment in against that. But doubtless it was a good thing.
What was your health like generally then throughout this period?
Pretty good. I did have one carbuncle that I had to go down to the field dressing station for the RAMC doctor to lance it.
But generally, your health was good.
Yes. I was never ill. When we went out, we were fit, very fit people.
Was this true of the rest of the people as well? Did they all stay fairly healthy?
Yes. Well, I don't think I was any different from anybody else who looked after himself and knew it was the sensible thing to do, however much it cut into your wish to have a bit more sleeping time.